Welcome to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer, and I feel like this is the best friend edition of Office Hours because I got my best friends up here with me, and now I have one of my best friends in the world, Jim Quick, as our guest. And what's so much fun about Jim Quick is that he's the only guy I know that hates to be around a lot of people and doesn't like speaking, and pretty much that's what he does for a living. It's like, you know what? I'm going to pay you to do your greatest fear. I think he'd rather literally jump into the octagon with you, Forrest, than speak in public. But he gets more speaking gigs than even me. And it's because he changes the way people look at things. And he's the founder of Quick Brain Universe, author of the best-selling book and the expanded edition of the best-selling book, Limitless, which is right there. Welcome, my dear friend, Jim Quick.
It's good to be here with everyone. Thank you, everybody who's tuning in and watching this. I'm looking forward to having this brainy conversation.
I love brainy conversations. I feel like the scarecrow when we have them with you, at least. But more importantly, Jim, I want to reverse engineer something that we've talked about in the past, but I've never asked it in this way. I like to tell people that there's two things that limit us. One is the meaning that we give things that will limit who we are and our potential. But it's our imaginations that also limit us, because we will never overachieve our own imagination. We'll never overachieve our own self-image. And people tried to throw on you when you were young a really low bar self-image. I think they even called you the boy with the broken brain. And now people pay you millions of dollars to expand their brain. So I wanted to talk to you about, how do we expand our imagination so we don't limit ourselves so much by what other people think?
Let's do it. Einstein said imagination is more powerful than knowledge. And I would agree with that. Knowledge is what is. Imagination really is what could be. And I feel like a lot of your listeners have had this experience where they've taken the invisible and they've made it visible. Right, where they've taken something that's inside of them and then they've created it on the outside. And it's like our friend Wayne Dyer says, that it's not that you'll believe it when you see it. Maybe you'll start seeing it when you believe it. And all behavior is belief driven. But you're right, I feel like we can only create, based on the limits of our imagination, which there really are none. But I feel like we hold a lot of unconscious self-images, beliefs on how things work, and that could severely handcuff us. And I think part of being limitless is not about being perfect. It's about redrawing the borders and boundaries of what's possible. And it all starts with the mind, for sure.
Penny.
Jim, I am a huge fan. I do consider you to be an X-Man. I love that story. I try to tell it as much as possible. And hearing from you about being a visionary, it's a struggle I've had my entire life, because it's a balance between holding to your vision and the world telling you you're crazy or you're wrong. And I'm a fourth generation roofer from New York City. I bought out my dad's company. Now he works for me and he's 76. So I'm trying to start a TV show and he thinks I'm crazy. Get on the roof, get back on the roof and go to work. Stop playing with your camera. I'm like, Dad, this is the future. And he's like, you're crazy. And so how do I cultivate inside inner peace? There, I'm so grounded in my vision. How do I help everybody around me, even just support me or not come at me and consistently tell me I'm wrong? How do I make the peace so grounded that everybody around me knows that my vision is solid?
Wow, let's unpack that. That's a great question.
I feel like Bucky.
There's a quote in my book, Limitless, from a French philosopher that says, life is the letter C between the letters B and D. And we could translate that. B stands for birth, D stands for death, obviously, and C, what's in the middle, is choice. And so our lives are the sum total of all the choices we've made up to this point. Like, what are we going to eat? What are we going to read? What are we going to spend time with? Where are we going to live? What are you going to focus? What things mean? And I believe that these difficult times, they could distract us. These difficult times, they could diminish us. Or these difficult times, they could develop us. But we always make the choice. There are a couple of choices we could always make. If there's a situation with a family member or our peers and we somehow feel like their expectations, their opinions matter too much, we could either change two things, either our procedure, like how we deal with them, or we could change our perspective. You know, what thing, going back to what David said in terms of the meaning behind it. For me, when I got started, this is my 33rd year, so I'm 51, 33 years. There was no such thing as a brain coach. It was an option that my guidance counselor gave me, you know, especially with my track record in school. As you mentioned, I had traumatic brain injury when I was 5, and I had learning disabilities, poor focus, poor memory. It took me 3 years longer to learn how to read. I remember when I was 9 years old, I was slowing down a class. A teacher came to my defense because I was being teased. And the teacher said, and from the whole classroom said, leave that kid alone. That's the boy with the broken brain. And that's where that moniker came from. That label became my limit. And so I think our self-image is very important. We need to protect that, especially sometimes from the people that we care about the most. So I totally relate. You know, they say it's hard to be a prophet in your own hometown. And I could definitely, it resonates true for me. I would say that, you know, I spent a lot of time in senior centers. I lost my grandmother to Alzheimer's when I was 7. We donated all the proceeds to Limitless to build schools in Ghana, Guatemala, Kenya, but also Alzheimer's research for women, where women are twice as likely to experience Alzheimer's than men. Mm-hmm. And in her memory, but I spent a lot of time in senior centers because nursing homes, because I never had those role models growing up. So much wisdom, but I also hear a lot of regret and not a positive conversation. But I always want to remind everyone here that when we're taking our final breaths, none of other people's opinions, their expectations, even our fears of those things are going to matter. What's going to matter in those moments is how we laughed, how we learned, how we loved, you know, how we lived. Because I hear a lot of regret at that stage from these individuals. Somehow they didn't pursue a relationship because of what other people, you know, thought about that relationship, or they pursued a career path similar to your situation because it was expected of them from their family. And, you know, it's hard to make a new choice, right? But just one little choice, it changes your destination. Some people would call it their destiny. So in terms of perspective, my perspective is I could love my family, I could love my friends, but I could really decide who my peers are. You know, we have these things in our nervous system called mirror neurons. And you've heard this phrase, who you spend time with is who you become. Like, we're the average of the 5 people we spend the most time with. It's because we're imitating those individuals.
That's why we're sitting here.
Exactly. And this is so important because your community, that's why it's so important. It's not just your neurological connections, it's your social connections. And so I always tell people to watch, WATCH, which is a simple acronym, because what are we imitating? We're imitating their words. We use the same language as the people we spend the most time with. The A are actions. We behave the same way as the people who we spend the time with. If our friends work out all the time, we're more likely to work out. The T is thoughts. We tend to think the same way as the people around us. And finally, the C and the H, the C is character. And we tend to have the same moral compass or integrity, the same standards as the people we spend the most time with. And the H are habits, right? And we all know that first you create your habits, and then those habits create you. You create your habits of exercising or eating right or meditating, journaling, whatever, and those habits create you back. I bring this all up because I really do believe that, again, that we can love those individuals. They could be sincere, but they could be sincerely wrong. Meaning that,
wow, I love that.
Maybe their energy vampires are pulling you down. There's some kind of secondary gain. And so I think it's important. It gives you some grace to understand, to acknowledge it. Maybe they don't want you to grow so much because they don't want to lose you. Right. Or maybe they don't want you to get your hopes up. So you'll be hurt. And so I really think that everybody here should subscribe to being a thermostat, not a thermometer. Or a thermometer, the only function of a thermometer is it reacts to whatever the environment's giving us. And sometimes we react to other people's opinions and their expectations or fear of making mistakes. But a thermostat doesn't do that. right? A thermostat doesn't react to the environment. It gauges, it knows what's going on around them. But a thermostat sets a temperature and all of a sudden the environment reacts to you. And that's really, for me, the creative process, it's leadership.
That's a great analogy. I love that.
Yeah, we create a temperature, we create a vision, we create a standard, we create, you know, goals or KPIs or dreams, and then we make it like we see it. And so, you know, here's the thing. If we're going to be completely raw about this, it's change is hard. Growth can be scary, but nothing is as hard and scary as being stuck somewhere you don't belong. Like when we're taking our final breaths again, like I would live with the end in mind, because the life we live are lessons we teach. And being, you know, instead of preaching to the people around me, you know, I just want to be a shining example, and I want to practice what I post, right?
Yes.
So that's why it's so important to be aligned with this, so they could, you know, it's better well done than well said. So I rather change their minds by being an inspiring example and follow through. And even using that as motivation, like who's counting on me to show up today? Who's counting on me to play my A game?
Thank you.
You're doing
so much.
Both, buddy, and I appreciate it. Speaking of showing up, here's a good friend that's always showing up for me. Thanks, Forrest.
What's up, Jim? First of all, it's an honor, big fan. three questions for you, all in one, though. Don't worry, I'll make it small. So you're one of the world leading knowledge acquisition coaches, for lack of, you know, brain coach, but that's kind of what I see you as. Do you have any like fears, concerns, or hopes for the younger generation and the way they're acquiring knowledge? Because Dave and I, we're old, we learn from books. You're about our age, you learn from books. Kids today, they're learning things from a different environment, and maybe I'm afraid of it, and maybe it's because I don't understand it, but what are your thoughts on it, understanding how the mind works? Break that down for me.
So our brains haven't really changed in 150,000 years, and so obviously technology has with AI and these devices. It's interesting. So I'm a fan of technology. I'll say that. I'm very optimistic. And I also feel like technology is a tool for us to use intelligently. But when it uses us, then there's a challenge. If we're touching our phones upwards of 1,000, 2,000 times a day, I feel like it drives information overload. It drives distraction. There's something called digital dementia, where we're relying on technology to remember things for us.
Yes.
Like think about it, keep your to-dos,
my life.
Calendars. Right. I mean, how many phone numbers do we all used to remember growing up? Right.
Yeah, it was like probably like 20.
Right. And how many phone numbers do we currently remember? Probably very, very few.
Almost my own.
Memorize.
Almost.
Right. Your own is a good one to remember. But I don't want to remember 1,000 phone numbers, but it should be very concerning. We've lost the ability to remember one phone number or a PIN number or a seed phrase or a password or something we just read. I believe two of the most costly words sometimes in our lives are, I forgot. You know, I forgot to do it. I forgot to bring it. I forgot what I read. I forgot what I was going to say. I forgot what was said to me. I forgot to go to that meeting.
But even more, Jim, just to interrupt you too, in the line of Carnegie, you know, I think a big mistake, as Carnegie taught, is people forget names. And one of the things I admire about what you can teach people is how to remember. Nobody wants to hear anything as much as they want to hear their actual name. And it's one of the things that you've taught me on how to remember the thousands of people that I meet, just by addressing them and acknowledging who they are. So sorry to interrupt, but you didn't mention names. No. And that's a terrible one to forget.
So very important. You know, the old phrase that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. You know, when we forget someone's name, we tell them that, you know, it's the subtext is we don't care, they're not important. And so it's hard to really sell them. How are you going to sell them whatever you have to offer them, you know, that you're going to take care of their finances, their family, their future, their wellness, if you don't care enough just to remember them, right? I always tell people it's a simple, there are many things online. We have hundreds and hundreds of free hours online, and there's videos of me taking people on stage. And a simple thing everyone could do is just be more suave when you're at an event or you're at a wedding. And it's another acronym. S in suave is you say the name, just repeat it. U is use it a few times in the conversation. The A is you could ask about a person's name, especially if it's a little bit different or unusual. You can ask things like, how do you spell it? Where is it from? You know, who are you named after? What does it mean? Right. just like, you know, the phrase, a name is the sweetest sound in a person's ears. I think most people are flattered. The V is visualize. You could take a person's name and turn it into a picture. So it makes it a little bit more memorable for yourself. So a person's name is Mark. You can imagine putting a check mark on their forehead, you know, David, slingshot to the nose, Mary, they're carrying a couple lambs. You know, just and you're doing this in the privacy of your own mind, right? But once it's a shortcut, though, because it's to overcome what I call the 6-second syndrome. Somebody shares something with you, like their name, you have 6 seconds to do something with it. Otherwise, as soon as that handshake breaks, it just falls right through the floor, right? And so, and then once you know the person's name, the pictures disappear. It's just a way of your brain loves to be able to remember things easier when you could see it. And finally, the E in swab is you end using their name. You end the conversation. Because if you can walk into a room of 20 strangers, leave saying goodbye to every single one by name.
Damn.
I mean, who are they all going to remember, right? They're gonna remember you. But going back to this, generation, I feel like technology is a tool for us to use. But if the technology is using us, then we become the tool, and that's not the goal. I feel like it's a balance of convenience and balancing being convenient and being crippled. Meaning that if your apartment or office is on the fifth floor and you take the elevator every single time, the elevator is a form of technology, but then it's convenient, but then you don't get your steps in. Right. Or if you have to go to the bank and it's 8 blocks away and you take a Lyft or an Uber or you drive, very convenient technology car, but then we don't get the steps in. And so for me, I just want to be able to not solely rely on technology. And I think kids do, you know, with AI, but it can be used intelligently. Like AI for me is not artificial intelligence. It's more augmented intelligence. Augmented is like a partner, right? You're using it to support you. It's a creative partner. And all the things that we teach in Limitless, there's a whole chapter on how to use AI to enhance your HI, your human intelligence. But if there's more things I would inject into school systems, and we've trained, they use our systems in some of the top school systems in the world, in Finland, in South Korea. And what I would say is one of the things that's missing besides, you know, social intelligence, emotional regulation is learning how to learn, this idea of meta-learning. I think it's the most important skill for all of everybody of every age and stage to master. Because when you can learn how to learn, you can focus, you can concentrate, you can solve problems, you can read better, faster, retain it, remember it. What can you apply that to? Literally everything, medicine, money, marketing, you know, Mandarin, music, everything gets easier in your life. It's if knowledge is power, then learning is our superpower. And today everything is, that's how we're compensated, right? It's not like it was thousands of years ago where it was our brute strength. Today it's our brain strength. It's not our muscle power. Today it's our mind power. And the faster you learn, the faster you earn. So I wish there was classes. School teaches you what to learn, math, history, science. But they don't teach you how to learn it. There's no classes on memory.
I love it.
Or anything else.
So weird, amazing. Right? Why not?
Why not? The anchor man.
Teach me how to learn. Yeah.
Yeah, Jim, get out there. I'm working on it for us.
Write as many books as we can.
That's so great, Jim. My name is Bucky. It's great to meet you. And it's also great to experience you in this way. You know, I think reading your bio and watching you online and even seeing you on stage it a few times, I'm experiencing you so differently in this type of interview. And I think it's one of the values of office hours is just to get to see who you really are and the essence of the work. It's just really emoting strongly from you. The question that I have is, you know, a lot of times with high level experts, people who have been doing what they've been doing for decades, right? You get into this conversation of this is my expertise and this is my lane in which I play in. But I think about Limitless and I think about the expanded version. I think about the expansion of what it is that you teach. You know, a lot of people look at the brain as just the brain and don't realize that it's also very much connected to the nervous system and how we process information is not only just mentally, but it's holistically through our whole body system. My question for you is around this topic of Limitless, what is it that we're really capable of? Like what's leading edge neuroscience explain as far as what we're capable of, as far as how we receive information, how we interact with each other, how we access information that is maybe outside of our human experience and inside of a realm of what some would call like a super consciousness. What are your thoughts on that? If you just want to kind of play in that space.
Yeah, this is fascinating. So I believe our nervous system and our brain's part of our nervous system is like the most advanced technology that's out there. And one of the challenges is it doesn't come with an owner's manual, right? And it's not always user friendly. I wrote Limitless to be kind of an owner's manual for our brains and our nervous system. But you're right, it's not limited just to our brain, right? We have our senses, we have our vagus nerve, we have this gut brain access, you know, where they say your brain is your gut is your second brain. And, you know, I take a very whole self approach to, you know, the application of performance. And I would say that let's take the 86 billion, you know, brain cells, neurons that we have. Each one has upwards of 10,000 synaptic connections. If you were to extrapolate that, that's more connections than there are stars in the universe, right? And so we have this incredible wealth-building device, creative device. But I don't think a lot of people know how to be able to use any, you know, a fraction of it, even though we use our whole brain. It's a myth that we use 10% of our brain. It's just like our body. Like when you're moving around, you're using all of your body. But some people are just using more effectively. It's because it's trained and they have technique and they're more fit, so they don't tire and they could accomplish amazing things. I think it's important to build our mental muscle on the daily. You know, and there are a lot of apps and, you know, we have courses and all that. I think reading is a good place to start. I always appreciate this. If somebody has decades of experience and they put into a book and you can sit down and read that book in a few days, you could download decades into days. So you could upgrade that software, right? You upgrade your technology. People get new computers, they get the new iPhones, they upgrade their apps. But when's the last time we upgraded, you know, the technology that's created all of these things, right? I would also say that, and reading is to your mind what exercise is to your body. There's so many different things, ways of approaching it. Like if you take something like multiple intelligence theory out of Harvard, that's not just one form of intelligence. Like an IQ test is kind of dated and not as valid as when we used to think that a test you take when you're 8 years old is your potential when you're 88 years old. Right. Because it's measuring very specific areas that it's not just verbal or mathematical, like the SATs. There's interpersonal intelligence. Sure. You know, people are just great with people. There's kinesthetic intelligence, the great martial artists, dancers, athletes. There's musical intelligence. There's visual spatial intelligence. And so it's not fixed like your shoe size. And each intelligence should be equally valued and can improve through dedication, through practice. You know, we created something, an assessment, just like there's personalized medicine based on an assessment or personalized medicine based on a DNA test. We created something called a personalized performance around your brain. And we've identified four primary brain types and we codified it with animals. And just the really short of it is code. Remember CODE. The C are your cheetahs and your cheetah. If you're a cheetah and people could take this assessment, we'll make it free for all your viewers, mybrainanimal.com. It only takes 4 minutes, but the benefit is you'll understand your brain type. And then we give you strategies for free on how to read faster based on your brain. Because I realized after 3 decades of doing it, it's not how smart you are. It's how are you smart. It's not how smart your kids are. It's how are they smart. And so a cheetah, their dominant trait is action. So these are individuals that thrive in fast-paced environments. They adjust really quickly. You know, they have strong intuition. If you're an owl, the O are their dominant trait is logic. So these are individuals that they love data. They love the facts. They love the figures. They're extremely logical. And these two individuals think differently, right? They buy differently. So we even show you in the follow-up after you take this assessment how to sell based on brain types, how to hire and train your team based on their brain types, how to parent also as well. The D are your dolphins, and your dolphins' dominant trait is creativity. These are people who have incredible imaginations. They have a vision. If you're a dolphin, you could just kind of have a vision for your brand, your business, your future. Maybe others can't see yet. They're very passionate about that vision. And finally, the E in code are your elephants. And your elephants, their dominant trait is empathy. They're highly compassionate. They want to serve others, make people feel seen and heard. And just to wrap that up is like we gave this assessment to our team. And do you know 100% of our customer service team are elephants, and we didn't hire for them initially. But think about it. That's their power. That's their dominant trait is empathy. So they are our community builders. They want everyone in our community to feel recognized and understood and supported. You know, my CEO, my business partner is the dolphin, has a vision for impacting a billion brains, no brain left behind. You know, our CFO is an owl. Has to see the numbers every single day. And so when you understand how your brain works, you can work your brain. And this is just another example of just how we're underutilizing it, because it's interesting. So take the assessment. I would love to get feedback, and people could post it online, tag all of us so we get to see it, see what the dominant brain type of is of the viewership. And then have your spouse, have your kids, you know, have your team take it also as well, because it would take the judgment away, because people operate how they operate, right? Because it's the control center for everything. And I just want to remind everybody that it's use it or lose it. And it's one of those things where you are the pilot of your mind. You don't have to be the passenger instead. But I really do think, and sometimes it's hard, again, but I feel like life is hard for one of two reasons. Either you're leaving your comfort zone, or life is hard because you stay in your comfort zone. And that's, I feel like, is almost as detrimental.
If not more. Now you guys know I have such a fine friend, Jim Quick, who puts himself into an uncomfortable position by surrounding himself. I invite him to dinner and he thinks it's just going to be me and him, and then there's 1,000 people around. Sorry, Jim. But one of the things I love about Jim, and he said it during the interview, is he's one of the world's greatest mentors, coaches, and teacher. A mentor is someone who sits in a situation that we all want to be in with that brain and using it to perform, but also a coach. He brings the best out of us with the code especially. And then he created an operating manual. So he's a great teacher, and he has the text Limitless is a great guide on how to best improve probably the greatest technology we've been given as human beings in the human experience, as Bucky and I talk about often. He's a repeat offender to office hours. He's a dear friend of mine, and he shows up as just that, someone that we admire and appreciate. Jim Quick, making the world better from the inside out. Thanks for joining us on Office Hours.